Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason, and I would say with me as usual, if this were the
Right.
Over and Back podcast, but this is the WrestleSpective podcast, and I believe you've only been a guest one time, but it is Rich Kreich. Rich, welcome.
Hello, this is very strange. Hello, Jason, man. How are you?
I'm
Person
fine. It
I've
and
only talked to once before in this retrospective series.
right. Yes, and it was like 6 years ago, probably something like that. So whenever we're doing shows. So yes, so for those who don't know, first of all, Rich is very famous in the wrestling world as the co-owner of the Voices of Wrestling website with the Voices of Wrestling flagship podcast, among other great shows on his network. And also, Rich and I do a NBA history show called Over and Back NBA. So if you want to check any of that stuff out, if those topics interest you, you should do that. Rich, is anything that I'm forgetting that's important?
No, you nailed it. Yeah, I think you got it there. Yeah, we after that episode where we talked, I think it was Spring Stampede, right? We talked about DDP and Savage, I think. Yeah,
Yes, right.
interestingly enough,
Yeah.
yeah, nice little hook to this episode. For
Sure.
whatever reason, I don't know why. I think you and I had just like always sort of like maybe discussed NBA history on Twitter while we were in kind of the wrestling sphere, and then you were kind of like, hey, you know what? I'm kind of getting a little sick of the wrestling thing, but I'm not sick at all about NBA. So do you maybe want to start doing a podcast with that? And we tried it out, and yeah, man, what, 5, 6 years later, still doing it. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, of course, wrestling or basketball going through the current issues that wrestling is. Well, I guess wrestling is continuing for some
Yeah, no,
odd reason.
wrestling is good, man. Live
Yeah.
is a part of the fabric of the we're recording. When is this coming out? Because like they might get shut down, the
It's
government
coming
might.
out like today or tomorrow. So
Okay, so
probably
while we're
today.
still
So,
talking, yes,
yeah.
WWE is the fabric of society,
Right.
Jason, and they are an
Yeah.
essential business that must operate live every Monday and every Friday. So,
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yes. So we're gonna get nostalgic, as we have been doing for most of the episodes since we came back, talking about some Randy Savage matches. And this one has a hook to NBA history as well. It is Dennis Rodman's final match in WCW. Randy Savage and Dennis Rodman taking each other on at WCW Road Wild on August 14th, 1999 in Sturgis, South Dakota. Oh, Sturgis, South Dakota. What a fine place to have wrestling. So what's your feeling on the what's the name of the event? Is the event called Rogue Wild? What's the biker rally? Is that an official name? It's just the
So
Sturgis
the
Biker
biker
Rally?
veil, yeah, I forget what is the name of that. I am not in the I think it's just Sturgis. People just call it Sturgis.
You're not a
Like,
biker?
I
Yeah.
think I am. Believe it or not, no, not of. Oh, used to be, but I've since fallen off of the
Okay,
being a
sure.
45-year-old white man. So that's instead of a
Right.
33-year-old white
No.
man. But I would never get a motorcycle.
Yes.
Those things are very dangerous. I
They are
think they're
very
just
dangerous,
called
yeah.
Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. I think that's it.
You're
I think
correct.
that's all the
Yes,
name.
you're
Okay.
correct. Yep. All right. So, anyway, yes. So WCW for 4 years in a row, ending in 99, held pay-per-view in August, Road Wild. I think the first one was called Hog Wild, but then there was some copyright issues with Harley-Davidson, I
Yeah,
think.
they were like,
And so there was that wrestling that occurred, anyway, it was an interesting crowd. I actually think in some ways it was kind of neat, but in a lot of ways it was very negative.
Yeah, the overt racism wasn't as awesome.
No, yeah,
You know,
well,
that got
that
a
was
little
negative.
tough. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
that
we'll talk
was
about it on this episode where they're like, "Hey, here's the baby face, Dennis Rodman." And
okay.
turns out the crowd not too into a African American man being the good guy.
Okay.
Harlem Heat ran into that issue too where they're like, "Hey, we're Harlem Heat." And everyone's like, "Boo!" And they're like, "Okay,
Right.
well, we're
Yeah.
supposed to be good, but I guess today we're not." So
We'll get into that, but I'm not really clear that Rodman is supposed to be the good
Well,
guy
he
here. I
was, but
mean,
it's WCW 1999. I'll go into a little
right.
bit of what was going on around there.
Okay.
Technically, he was, but this is
Okay.
also a failure of WCW 1999, where it made it nearly impossible to figure out who was what. And that's why people stopped watching their television and stopped buying their
Yes.
pay-per-views because they didn't know who to root for, what they're supposed to do. But no, I'm pro. So I'm negative to the racism of the Sturgis rally. I'm negative towards the, hey, let's have 10,000 people come to our event and not pay us any money part of it. But I.
That's Ted Turner's problem, not our problem. So,
Exactly, right. That's not my, you know, my checkbook that I have to worry about here. But I am pro unique wrestling venues, and that's where like the Sturgis, the Road Wild, I always liked. Bash at the Beach, I always liked. You know, there was one where it literally took place on a beach. The Spring Breakout shows that WCW used to do, you know, at Club Lavella, and then they did one on, you know, in South Padre Island, Texas. They made everything feel unique. There was those moments, and there was those. I mean, there's a bunch of other things. WCW did a bunch of other weird. The Mall of America. America, the first Nitro, taking place in a freaking mall. You know what I mean? Like, it's really cool stuff. So WCW was always good about that, of making these events feel like they were quote-unquote events, not just a wrestling show, but hey, we're a wrestling show, and also you're seeing this. And it made a very unique perspectives. You saw unique, you know, it just made it feel differently versus, you know, today's wrestling. You can watch a WWE pay-per-view from this month, from 5 years ago, from 4 years ago, from 8 years ago, and it's just WWF holds an event in a basketball / hockey arena, and that's all it is. Everything looks the same, the sets are about the same. Like, now these days they're literally the same. Like, they used to have different sets. So I'm always pro, like, let's have a little fun, let's have a unique, you know, atmosphere. It doesn't always work, and sometimes there are your duds, or there are times where it doesn't really quite, you know, but I love that aspect of WCW, that they felt like they were on the road, that they felt like they were coming to your town and being a part of your event and doing that sort of stuff. And it led to some good, obviously there's some bad as well, but I'm pro this as well. And it's one cool thing. I don't know if you've been checking out AEW at all on TNT, but they had like an event where they were on a boat not that long ago. They were on Jericho's cruise or whatever, and had an event on the boat. And they seemed to understand that the idea and the purpose of having fun events outside, inside different venues, weird stuff like that, understanding that, yeah, on the one side of, you know, WWE, it's just going to have sterile, everything's going to kind of look the same. So what do we need to do to stand out? And you know, WCW made that call really from, like, you know, 1995 on, and AEW's kind of making the same call too, that, you know, have fun venues, go outside, go on the boats, do some weird stuff. It's not always going to work, but at least it's going to make you feel and look unique.
No, I agree. I think it's really that was one thing that was cool about WCW. Even in the years where it got pretty bad, they were willing to experiment and try weird, crazy things. And sometimes they led to like really interesting stuff that never would have happened in the much more structured environment of WWE. So that was one, you know, benefit that they definitely had. But this funny thing about this is the fifth to last match of Randy Savage's career, mm-hmm. which is kind of baffling to think about. But the four that occurred after this were a January 4th, 2000 Tokyo Dome show for New Japan, where he faced Rick Steiner. And then 10 days later, he wrestled in a WCW house show to Sid Vicious in Charleston, West Virginia. And then May of 2000, 4 months later, he had what was a surprise, basically 45-second appearance in a giant WCW Thunder Battle Royal involving the New Blood and Millionaires Club, where he eliminated Sean Stasiak, Mike Awesome, The Wall, and Chris Candido, and helped Ric Flair and Chris and Hulk Hogan during a bunch of post-match shenanigans.
Did you ever watch that Battle Royal appearance? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I watched it today, as a matter of fact.
It's awesome. And you're like, hey, Savage is back. This rules. He never comes back. It's just, it's so weird. Because you're like, whoa, that's all. Like, the crowd goes nuts and everyone's happy. And it's like, whoa. Yeah. And then you realize, oh, he never came.
I would say that has not aged well. I mean, he does get a nice reaction. And the brief moments he's involved, they're pretty cool. But there's so much going on that, like, the whole thing is just, I remember, I feel like I did see it, like, you know, when it happened or soon after it happened. And I remember being kind of chaotic and fun. But it's just all over the place.
Getting your brain into 2000 WCW is not easy. It was difficult getting our brain into 1989 WCW for this one. But yeah, getting your brain into 2000 WCW is like, you got to wean into it, man. You can't go from, like, you know, you were watching, you know, Rick Steiner and Randy Savage in the Tokyo Dome. And then you go to you can't do that. You got to have a buffer. Right. You got to watch, like, you know, a bunch of, like, a random assortment of WCW 2000 matches to get back into the headspace of, okay, 1,000 people are going to run in, 1,000 things are going to happen. People are going to hit each other with chairs. Someone's, you know, screwing somebody over. It's,
it makes sense. Yeah.
You got to really get ready for it. Yeah.
Legends are pretty much random. Yeah. No, it's not ideal. And then the final match of his career, 4.5 years later, December 5th, 2004, six-man tag team with AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy versus Jeff Jarrett, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall. My recollection of that is Savage, like, runs in the last minute and hits the elbow and wins, and he's, like, not even involved for the rest of the match.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, I haven't seen it in years, but from what I remember, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so basically, yeah. So really, like, this is the second-to-last televised real match, you know, in essence. So, yeah, obviously, very late in his career, we're pretty much at the end of the, by far, the worst era of Savage's career, I would say, which I like to call midlife crisis match, where he's got hair plugs and a ponytail. He's got a very young girlfriend who's his valet named Gorgeous George. just has like way too much muscle, can barely even move. Like even, you know, the one always strong part of his game, you know, his interviews and, you know, just being able to create the character, but he's basically laden with like either terrible catchphrases or ones that he's ripping off from other wrestlers, like pretty brazenly. Like it's just, it's really bad. And there's very little to, you know, and again, I'm revisiting some of this, so maybe some of it will hold up better than I'm expecting. But 1999, Randy Savage, pretty much, you know, he was one of the worst wrestlers, you know, in WCW at the time, just kind of given the exposure that he had.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It was a bad era. And like you said, you know, one of the things that you could always count on from Randy Savage, whether you know, were with the character or not or anything like that, but even when he, you know, his almost all of his WWF stuff, his early territory stuff, and then even, you know, the early ages of WCW from like 1995 until, you know, 98, 97 or whatever, he was still like he could still go. Like he was still one of the better wrestlers. He had good movement. He was all over the ring. You know, he's able to just do all that sort of stuff. And like you said, he comes back here and he's like a 50 pounds heavier of just pure muscle mass. It was obvious that it was like way too much weight on him too, because he didn't move around like he used to. And one of the things that happened around this time as well is he would still do in the elbow drop, but like he couldn't land on his knees anymore because his knees were getting a little hurt. So he would basically just like do an elbow drop, like kind of like a shoot elbow drop, like land on the guys. And he ended up hurting like four dudes. Like I think Evan Courageous like broke his sternum. And I forget who, there was like a laundry list of guys that just kept getting hurt with him in the ring. And like one of the things that Savage was great about is he was great at protecting his opponents. Like he was just incredible at doing that. The personal cost was, I land on my knee as opposed to landing on you with the elbow drop. And now I can't do that anymore. So I'm just going to land on you. And, you know, I just don't think he was able to adapt to his bigger body. And it wasn't a good look for Randy Savage either, because you're expecting, oh, here's Randy Savage. Here's the guy I've known and watched for a decade or whatever. And he comes here and it's, you know, maybe some of it will hold up a little bit differently. I haven't seen a lot of this in a while, but I do remember him becoming a lot slower, a lot more plodding, a lot more just kind of what you would assume just a generic bad old 1999 wrestler would be, just kind of clubbing blows and punches and just nothing that like really kind of he feels like he's Randy Savage in name only at this point, which really sucks, because he's a guy who his track record was like 15 straight years of being just like this awesome, charismatic, really good worker and all that sort of stuff. And you get this Savage and it's just kind of, I don't know, just it's different. And it's easily the worst era, I think, in his career.
Yes. Definitely. So the video package, I did not dive deeply into the build for this match. There really is not much of one. Basically, Rodman randomly appears in WCW. I think for the first time in a year, yes. Unless I'm missing something.
No, last time was Bash at the Beach when he faced Karl Malone. So
So he hadn't been on Nitro or anything, or you know, he attacked Savage during a match in which Savage is having with Kidman, that's it. That starts it. And then we get a clip of Arliss, who's in character, Robert Wall in character is Arliss, the HBO show from 20 years ago, obviously on at the time. And in character is Arliss. He says that this Rodman Savage match is going to break every pay-per-view record. How did that go, by the way?
Not quite. So just to give you an idea of the other Road Wilds and their buy rates, 1996, 0.62 buy rate. For that, 1997, Road Wild, 0.65. 1998, 0.91. That was the Jay Leno. Jay Leno. Oh, dear God.
Right.
Jay Leno appeared.
Bikers love Jay Leno.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah, they obviously did. 0.91 by right there. So that did pretty well. 1999, this one that broke every pay-per-view record, 0.55. So it was actually the lowest of any of the Road Wilds in history. Overall buys, 235,000 is what I meant to say. Very easy for me to do. So actually, not a bad buy rate for WCW at this time. It was the second to last pay-per-view that they'd ever have over 200,000. And that was their highest since Spring Stampede. So I don't want to say that Arliss was wrong. Right. I do wonder if a Hulk Hogan Kevin Nash career versus career may have played a part in it, but you know, I can't definitively say it didn't. So while it didn't break every record, at least it was like okay for WCW at the time. By the next month, though, they were plummeting, and pretty much they'd pop one more number for Halloween Havoc later that year, and then pretty much have under 100,000 buys until they died, you know, in 2001. So did not break any record, but I guess it was okay.
Yeah, did well for the time. Yeah, probably Hogan coming back on pay-per-view for the first time in, Yeah, 4 months. That was the previous one was the last time Hogan was on too. But that was probably the primary reason. Kevin Nash
Right. No, I'm sure
and
it
Randy
was.
Savage themselves were not exciting audiences that much. So, yes. So then Savage, we see a clip of Savage yelling at Rodman saying, take off your training bra and I'm going to make you a man right now. And then we get a clip of Dennis Rodman kidnapping Gorgeous George. And then shenanigans ensue. And then finally we say, I believe this, yeah, okay. It's an interview from, not from Road Wild, but from the Thunder or Nitro or whatever, says where Savage says that he has the baddest person in the world to protect her at service. And by the way, it's also the Hummer driver. So, I think the Hummer driver had been several months beforehand, right?
The white Humvee. I think
that was
so.
Like Slippery, right?
Yeah, it was. 99? It was. Yeah. And so the original idea was supposed to be Carmen Electra was going to do that. And that was going to build towards this. And for whatever reason, what happened, it didn't work that way. And they decided to change course and do all this sort of stuff. I have no idea. Yeah. It's really, really weird. It never made any sense. Like, because the problem is, like, early on in the Humvee thing, they initially were like, oh, I know who it is. And Savage would say, I know who it is. And Savage would allude to it here. And then a little bit after this, they would go, oh, nobody knows who the Humvee driver is. Nobody even, there was never like, oh my God, who could this be? Who could this be? Who could this be? And then it would come back like a year later and it never got solved. Ever solved, so who the hell knows what the whole plan of was.
I think they did end up they like made it like they like of one off somebody, like somebody actually was it. They finally did reveal it, but it was something that was completely stupid. And I who was hit with Hummer? Was it Nash?
So Hogan? Nash got hit by it once, and I believe somebody else got hit by it too. So
I was sure I should have looked this up, I guess.
No, your brain should really not. No, your brain really shouldn't. Yeah. I forget. Yeah, it hit Nash, and then it hit Hogan, I think, and who knows?
Yeah, there's somebody who there's somebody who he was listening right now, who's probably like, oh my God, what the hell are you doing? So yeah, and then Nash wasn't really even hurt by being hit by the and then Sid came on, and you would have thought, oh, it would have been Sid, and then it wasn't Sid, and then well, oh, then Luger said that he was the Hummer driver.
And then I remember a year later, like, Billy Kidman then attacked Hulk Hogan with the Hummer. So it was like, oh, maybe it was always Kidman. Okay. But then it, what? No.
Yes. Although, okay, apparently, apparently they heavily imply that it's Bischoff. That Bischoff was the actual Hummer driver. Okay. Yeah. So that's what it is. Okay. Well, there you go. I'm glad we sorted that out. That's very important to get into here.
Spoiler, this company's out of business and would die a year later. It's shocking.
Yeah. Not great. So, okay, this is Rodman's his first singles match, his fourth overall. He had last been, as you mentioned, in the tag team match at Bash at the Beach 1998. He was near the end of his NBA career. He'd played 23 games with the Lakers during the 1999 season before he was released. He was not on the team during the playoffs. I recall he did not like the number of young personalities that were on that team, including Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. Thought they were complainers and malcontents and maybe even giggle pusses, who knows, but not really much going to be left in his NBA career, as he's going to play 12 more games with the Dallas Mavericks in the 2000 season before calling it quits, although he did play some in minor leagues in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, this is really like a not a great period for Rodman's career, his life, everything. The act had kind of worn thin, the Rodman thing. Like, the Rodman thing was always like, hey, look, you cannot show up to practice and not try and not do all that, because when the game starts, there was Dennis Rodman. He was going to work his ass off and get all the rebounds and help you out and be the best defensive player on your team and all that sort of stuff. That had kind of worn out even in the final year of the Bulls championship. And then, the Lakers thing was a disaster. Then the Dallas Mavericks thing was even more of a disaster, 12 games in, and it's just like, he's done, and Cuban wants him out of there. And it's just, it was a complete disaster at this point. And, it had really... I mean, Rodman had at this point already like an incredible career. He'd been playing for years and years and years, but it felt like it did feel like this time, like his lifestyle and all that he kind of wanted to do with that was really kind of starting to play really it just rendered him completely, you know, unable to play NBA basketball anymore. And he seemed to kind of want to be more of the bad guy, Dennis Rodman, the partier, the drinker, that sort of Dennis Rodman. He was probably making more money doing that and having more fun doing that anyway. And he definitely geared his entire career and his life towards it as well. So, yeah, this is not even in a really great period for Dennis Rodman's life at this point either.
Right. It's sort of basically midlife crisis match versus midlife crisis Rodzilla.
Yeah, really. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yes, our announcers, Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay. Rodman himself has a large red kimono-style robe. He's wearing sunglasses, two nose rings and several other earrings, and a skull bunt bandana. It looks like it matched. It would have matched up well this year with the WrestleMania, pirate-themed WrestleMania. We get an actual good line from Lay Period Heenan, which is rare. He says, it's obvious to me some hotel is missing a shower curtain, which, you know, was... yeah.
I did like this, too. So as they're getting ready to enter, they're playing Rodman's music for, like, a good, like, 3 minutes, and he doesn't come out.
Right.
And they're like, oh, it's Dennis Rodman playing Mind Games, and, like, how much do you want to bet Dennis Rodman was found sleeping or he wasn't there and someone was like, where's Rodman? Where's Rodman? You know, I'm sure it wasn't Mind Games from old The Worm here. I believe it was just probably an issue of not being able to find him or get him standing upright. So, hey, they got him and he came out. So, hey.
Right. So, as I alluded to earlier, I guess Rodman ideally is the face here. Savage had basically been the company's top heel for 3 months. He'd won the title at the previous pay-per-view and then lost it the next night to a returning Hulk Hogan, which is something that happened quite often in WCW. Yeah. But then again, Rodman is the one who is doing the more heelish things here, which again is kind of stealing. Basically kidnapping, Savage's girlfriend, and Savage seems sort of legitimately like upset, like, you know, a normal human would be, emotionally about the, you know, somebody kidnapping someone he loves. So it seems like you should sympathize with Savage here. I'm sure the racism plays a strong part in it, but I don't know if like a normal WCW crowd would have been cheering Rodman in this case either. Like, I feel like a reflection more of the storyline than, because he does get some cheers here and Savage does get some boos. I feel like it's 60-40-ish maybe. Maybe you might read that differently, but I felt like it was reasonably close. There wasn't really a strong, face reaction for either guy.
Yeah, it was weird at the time because I'm right with you that like if you really boil it down and forget about the history of these two people, it's one guy is trying to protect his girlfriend, the other guy's kidnapping this guy's girlfriend. Like that's really what it boils down to. Right. And the one guy wants to, he's like, hey, where's your bitch at? And he's like, when you go back, you never go back. Like this one dude's trying to steal this other guy's girlfriend and then literally steals her. And it's like, okay, it's clear. But then because of the history of Randy Savage, I guess WCW thought that you would still boo Randy Savage because he was like controlling Gorgeous George and maybe Rodman was getting her away from that or whatever. But then it's clear as this match starts that Randy Savage is the babyface because they even mention, oh, Gorgeous George isn't out here because he wants to protect her from Dennis Rodman. It's like, okay, but that's very that guy wants to protect his girlfriend from the guy who's trying to kidnap her. Like, it seems pretty easy, but it's WCW 1999, so they made it way more complicated than it needed to be. And technically, I think Rodman's supposed to be the good guy, but it's hard to really sympathize with him on any level whatsoever.
Right. He's no George the Animal Steel when it comes to. Right. When it comes to eliciting sympathy, he just cares about Elizabeth. It's all. As you mentioned, Rodman gets the mic after Savage comes out. Savage comes out to his old, I forgot about his faux Metallica entrance music.
What up, Mach?
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad. It just adds to the midlife crisis thing. Like,
oh, it definitely does.
It's so terrible. It's like completely forgettable. But like you hear it and it's just this droning guitar music. And you're like, oh, man, it's Macho Man.
Generic WCW, entrance theme of, the late 90s. It was,
And it's heartbreaking because it's Macho who always had, the big, boisterous music. And here it just comes out to generic rock. Ugh.
Yeah, it's something Kenny Chaos should have come out to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a power plant guy music. And unfortunately, it's for Machos. And it hurts.
So, Yes. So anyway, Rodman gets the mic. He asks, "Where's my bitch? Where's she at?" And then Savage says, "Tonight you're my bitch." And then Rodman grabs the mic and attacks Savage with it. We're on. Rodman gets the first bit of offense. He sends Savage into the post, then throws him into the barricade, and then into the lightning grid. We get back in the ring, and Rodman hits a few fairly well-executed moves. He's got a good back elbow. Then he follows it up with a short arm clothesline. Then a Russian leg sweep kind of plays to the crowd in between each one. But a solid flurry of offense from Rodman so far. I was a bit surprised.
Yeah, it's Rodman in this, and that's where, like, this match doesn't, well, we'll talk about it overall, but, like, I always remember this match being a lot better than when I watched it this time or whatnot. But I do remember Rodman being, like, pretty competent at this point. In this first part of this match, he's very competent. Like, he's doing, I mean, if you watch past Rodman matches, they're not very good. I mean, this guy would do, right, like a hip toss, and everyone would be like, "Oh my god, he did a hip toss." And that, yeah, right, for a celebrity that was untrained and obviously didn't to put in the extra work to get much better, he was baseline pretty good. And here he was pretty good. Like, he knew what he was doing. He was able to kind of hit the beats at the right time, and yeah, it's not like incredible work, it's not insane, right, stuff, but it's solid enough, and it's pretty, yeah, you know, pretty good at this point. Particularly from a man who probably is drunk at this point. I could safely imagine that. He's probably. I'm just guessing. I don't know. But
probably,
you know, I mean, baseline, sort of 1999 Dennis Rodman, I don't think he was ever not drunk. Like,
right,
you know, yeah, there was, his body was 40% vodka at this point. And that's fine. Like, that's what he decided to do with his life. So that's fine. But no, he's like, okay. He's okay at this point. And you actually think, oh, maybe this is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, he's... you know, executing the moves well, which, you know, he's a high level athlete, and, you know, you've spent enough time wrestling, you're going to be able to pick up the basics in terms of executing basic moves. But I think it's also the dynamics with the crowd that are working fairly well. Again, not like fantastic, but, you know, solid, you know. And then Rodman does a very casual cover, gets to, and then Rodman argues vociferously with Billy Silverman about that two count.
It was very
and
clearly then, a two count. I mean, I don't know why Rodman thought he was going to be able to put the Macho Man Randy Savage down with a Russian leg sweep, but okay.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's where the inexperience comes in, I guess. You know, this isn't 1988 when the Russian leg sweep is a finishing move. You know, this is 1999. You know, things are different. Vociferously argues Bill Silverman, clotheslines him down, and then drops the elbow on top of him. And then Mickey J is in. We get a few dueling chants of people who are for Savage and for Rod, but not like the modern dueling chants, you know, where it's like an act, but just actual people, you know, rooting for one or the other genuinely. And then Savage gets the advantage a little bit by grabbing Rodman by the eyes and sending him down.
Yeah, so it unfortunately at this point the match kind of loses all semblance of you know, structure or whatever. Okay. I guess, like, being honest, like, we're not going to get a 10-minute Dennis Rodman Randy Savage match. Like, we were lucky we got the 3 minutes of, like, actual wrestling in this point. But yeah, now we begin just the constant. I mean, for the next 5 minutes, we're just going to beat up referees, do this sort of stuff, do this little heat stuff, and it's where the match now starts to break down a little bit. There's going to become a point where I'm going to get back into this match, but at this point I'm kind of getting a little annoyed that, like, oh, here comes another referee. Oh, and they knock him down. Oh, here comes another referee. Oh, they knock him down. Oh, here's, like, you know, the WCW magazine guy. We're going to knock him down and beat him up. It's just like, it got a little long in the tooth when you're at, like, the fifth guy that we're knocking down and beating up a little bit. It just, the feud didn't seem like it needed that, or the feud didn't feel like it was that built up well. So it felt like it was just kind of a crutch just to have them beat up the referees.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a cheap trick. I mean, but given what, you know, given the who they are, at what point in their careers they are, and I mean, they need everything they have. And right, I think it works okay. I agree with you that it's probably not just, I mean, this isn't like, you know, this isn't Steve Austin and Cactus Jack in an incredible war where they're just, you know, insane for each other and they're fighting everything off and, you know, no one can get in their way. It's not like that, obviously. It's nowhere near that level of intensity. It has good intensity considering all the circumstances, but yeah, I get what you're saying for sure. You know, and then, yeah, Savage gets, he chokes Rodman down. He drapes Rodman on the ropes and snaps him off. Then he follows up by dropping Rodman neck first on the ropes. And then, as you alluded to, Savage hits the floor. He knocks down someone at ringside who Tanay helpfully identifies as the new WCW magazine editor, Ross Foreman, who is apparently taking photos with like a digital camera instead of like, you know, a actual camera that a photographer would use, which is odd. And then Savage grabs the camera, knocks Rodman in the back of the neck. He gets two. Savage argues about it with referee Mickey J, then tosses him down. And then Scott Dickinson tries to get involved, and Savage attacks him too. So I will agree. I think the referee attacks, like, it would have worked a little bit better had, like, the referees actually done something that seemed to warrant them getting attacked. Like, if they were, like, really preventing Savage from, like, you know, unleashing a violent onslaught on Rodman or
something like that.
If there had been something that was just, like, other than, like, Savage just, like, randomly, like, you know, getting, like, way too frustrated for what, like, the moment, you know, warranted.
Right, like, if he's, like, beating him with a chair or something like that, and a referee comes in and says, no, don't do it, then I get, like, all right, I'm gonna beat these guys up. But it's just, like, yeah, it's just, like, a complete... I mean, I guess they were going with the madman thing. I get what they were doing, but, sure. Yeah, it didn't quite... work. And I don't know if you know this, but Russ Foreman's still in the wrestling business as well. He's the head of media relations for Impact, actually.
I had emails with
Russ Foreman before, so that's when I saw him here. I was like, oh, cool. Nice. I forgot that he was in, like, late era WCW, was starting the business. I would have... imagine if you come into the wrestling business in WCW 1999, why would you ever stay in this business? Like, I would have said, you know what? Wrestling just ain't for me. It's cool.
Right.
I'll go back to... doing PR for a medical company or some shit like that.
Sure.
But he's still doing it. So
hey, good for him, man. You know. Yes. So Savage then charges after Rodman, gets backdropped to the floor, which is a much more fierce bump than I'm used to 1999 Randy Savage taking.
Did you notice how close he was to Ross Foreman's head here?
Yeah, right.
Oh my god, he was like inches away from it. I'm like, no, God, the guy's out there. Like,
yeah. That was definitely scary. He does recover enough. He pulls Rodman's leg first out of the ring. Tony, at this point, decides to point out all the jewelry that Rodman and Savage both have, and that he could easily pull it out, which, like, I get the point he's making, but it sort of undermines, like, the violence of the match. Like, you know, you're left wondering, oh, why won't these guys do that? It's just, like, basically, like, calling attention to something stupid that it's, like... You know, the wrestlers aren't going to be doing that. So why even, like, bring it up? That was, you know, I think Tony Schiavone overall, like, is a pretty good announcer, but, like, that was the kind of stuff during this period. You're just kind of like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Well, but 1999 WCW, Tony Schiavone was like, this shit sucks. And I know it sucks.
Right.
And like, he was trying to keep his credibility, it seemed like. And he was just like, look,
okay,
I know it's garbage. Like, I get it. Like, it was clear he, like, fell out of love with wrestling at this time. And really just started hating it, and really just started making, like, actively making a mockery of it on the air, which really does suck. It's, like, really hard to watch, and it's, like, you know, I get, like, you're the man that's supposed to still be excited and happy and joy, like, get me excited and happy and into this. But, yeah, he wasn't really into that at that point, and it was kind of a shame. Like, the late era, you know, WCW Tony Schiavone is a bad announcer because he just hates it. You can tell he just wants to go call minor league baseball again. He just wants this thing to be dead so he can go to minor league baseball. But it is glad to know with AEW, you're seeing him again, like, love wrestling and get excited about wrestling again. So, you know, you hear him at AEW, and it's like, ah, yes. The Tony Schiavone, when he is motivated and when he does love wrestling, is one of the best announcers going. But yeah, at this time, he was just kind of having fun. He was just kind of jacking around with Tony and or he was just jacking around with Bobby and Mike at this point. And it felt like, he just was making a mockery of what he was watching, because I think he knew, you at home knew it was bullshit and terrible.
And it felt like he and, you know, he didn't hated each other. And
oh, they couldn't stand each other at this point.
Like, he hated it too. Yeah. So it was not, you know, it was not a good situation. It did not help the show. I mean, I don't think it, like, I mean, there were a lot of things that were much worse for making the show hard to watch, but it was bad. Yeah. So Savage tosses Rodman into the crowd, and then they send him back into the entryway. And then there's another throw into the barricade by Savage. We get a new ref in who's identified as Johnny Boone, who I do not remember, but Johnny Boone
I
also
had no idea about Johnny Boone. Yeah, this was the first time I'd ever heard the name Johnny Boone on WCW television. I watched a lot of WCW, so.
Yes, so I have no memory of Johnny Boone. And then Savage, you know, they walk around a bit. He takes Rodman backstage. Rodman ends up shoving Savage down a ramp. But then Savage recovers, tosses Rodman over a barricade and into a very convenient pile of trash that softens Rodman's landing. Then Savage goes over to a porta potty, He opens it up. He pulls a muscular guy out. Thankfully, the muscular guy must have been finished, or it was before he was going to do what he was going to do in the bathroom, and we don't have to see any of his naughty bits. And then Savage grabs Rodman, throws him into the porta potty, closes the door, and then tips it over. It doesn't go all the way over. It sort of tips halfway. It conveniently lands onto a pile of boxes so that it doesn't all the way over. We do get a disgusting visual as Rodman comes out of it, and there's a bunch of I do not know if it's real or if it's fake poo, but it definitely comes out of the porta potty as he exits.
It was, you know, because a lot of times when they do these porta potty spots, they either don't go all the way with it. Like recently on WWE, I think at the Royal Rumble, they did a porta potty spot and then nothing came out. It was just like the guys were dry afterwards or whatever. And like,
sure,
if you're going to do the porta potty spot, which is it's lame, it's a tropey, but at least have a little bit of, you know, have some liquid come out, if it's fake liquid,
I'd rather have it be fake. Yes,
yeah, right. I would definitely recommend.
We don't need to have shoot poop. You know?
Right. I would recommend work and poop if you're going to do it. But, you know, should you not have work and poop, whatever. But no, I appreciated the at least a minor attention to detail. I have to hope that it was just a porta potty sitting, because it was kind of just a random porta potty in the middle of a parking lot. I would hope, but you never know, man. You never know with wrestling sometimes. But at least they had the visual where there was some goo and some liquid coming out, which did add a little bit to it. And Tony, he briefly fell in love with wrestling again here, because you could tell as he was this all sucks. He was like, oh my God. He liked this. So this is at least got him to love wrestling for a little bit more.
Even he didn't like it. So I think they all were happy for a moment, you know.
right.
Yes. So Rodman recovers enough to toss Savage into a tour bus. WCW security chief Doug Tillinger makes an appearance, directs the wrestlers into the ring. Very few people had more camera time and were less charismatic than Doug Tillinger. I don't know if you have any positive Doug Tillinger takes.
I have nothing. Yeah, I appreciate his polo shirts. That's all.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, this dude, like, they always like they had him as a character, but I think Doug Tillinger was like, no, I have a job, guys. Don't distract me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think he didn't quite. I don't know if he quite got it ever that it was a work.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
right?
Because like you're saying, he had the charisma of a security guard, like a random security guard.
Right.
But
yes.
He never like it never felt like he ever did more than just like kind of fold his arms and be like, no, I gotta get control here. So
I mean, he made Jack Tunney look like The Rock, you know.
He
that's
did,
how
right.
Savage attacks Rodman from behind. They go down the entry ramp. Rodman sends Savage into the lightning grid again. Back in the ring, Rodman goes to the second rope. He tries a clothesline, but he ducks, and another ref is down. Genuinely, this time, I do not believe the ref was intended to be down. Gorgeous George comes out as Rodman locks in a sleeper. Savage breaks it with a jawbreaker. George then consoles him, and she hands him a chain as we see Nick Patrick come in. I don't believe that Nick Patrick saw the chain, although with Nick Patrick, you never know. Then George sneaks in a low blow on Rodman. Savage then hits Rodman with the chain, covers him, and that's it. That's the three count. And I appreciated the Savage scene to let this victory sink in as a genuine tough fight. And they did a nice job of putting Rodman over as like a worthy adversary who kind of proved like, oh, you know, he kind of belonged there, you know, even though he's not really a wrestler, but, you know, made it tough for Savage. But like I said, I think overall this was pretty entertaining, worked around everyone's limitations fairly well. Not quite as good as I remember it being, but, you know, again, if you're going to pick a Randy Savage match from the last, you know, year of his career, I think this is definitely the one that I would pick.
Yeah. No, it like, so there were some parts that I didn't like about it, and there were some parts that were a little long in the tooth, like I said, where they're just beating up the referees for like 3 minutes straight is kind of gets a little bit boring. But yeah, ultimately, like the brawl when they went backstage, I kind of liked that. I thought it was pretty good. I think it fit a lot better of what I ideally thought that this match and this feud was going to be, because it is over a woman. It is over Randy Savage's, you know, girlfriend at the time. And Rodman said some pretty vile things about her. So I love the idea of Savage and them having a fight, like just beating this guy up, throwing him against all this sort of stuff. So that's when that backstage stuff kind of works. That's when one of those brawls really does work pretty well. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. I really, you know, thought that when they're going backstage, the porta potty, coming back down to the ring, that was pretty good. The ending was a little convoluted. And the problem is with the ending is, like, you're kind of thinking, I think with the benefit of hindsight, knowing that there is no follow-up, that there's not, that Savage is done. Like, he just goes away after this. Maybe hurts it a little bit more. Like, had I just watched it in the moment, I'd be like, okay, cool. Well, it's building towards something. And knowing that it's not building towards anything, knowing that it's just like, that's it. And knowing that that's really the last hurrah for Randy Savage as far as like a pay-per-view match, a one-on-one match, all that sort of stuff. Like you said at the beginning, it's just like, it puts a stamp on what was just the worst era of Randy Savage. And it's just like, it's more sad and annoying that this is how it ended for him and that he would really never have another full-time match at this point ever again. But I mean, all things considered, given that it's Dennis Rodman in 1999, not a trained wrestler, not a wrestler that really gave a shit about, you know, training or getting ready or practicing or doing that sort of stuff. And then Randy Savage at this point where he could barely move and his body had just blown up to ridiculous degrees. The fact that they put this together, not bad. I mean, it wasn't an abject disaster like you maybe expected it to be, but it's not something that I would definitely say like, oh man, you got to go out of your way to check out this match. To be fair, it's like 10 minutes, so it's not like, you know, you're going to have to waste too much time of your life. But it's fine. It's like mildly entertaining. But yeah, it I think at the time I enjoyed it more than I probably enjoyed it watching it today.
Right. You might have better taste in wrestling now than you did.
Maybe.
Maybe worse. Who knows? You know, been a lot of years since this happened. Yes. So, all right, anything else? Is that's pretty much it. I mean, that's that kind of wraps it up. I don't know where our I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but where do you kind of put Savage in, like, you know, in terms of where he kind of rates among like your favorite guys and where he kind of rates among, like, you know, the all time greats in terms of like total package, not just worker, but, you know, in terms of character and promos and, you know, everything that kind of goes into that.
Yeah. So he's a guy that, like, before I started really watching a lot of Japanese wrestling was easily in my top five of all time. And, you know, guys, I always enjoyed him as well. It helped that he went to my high school. We have like a plaque at my high school and stuff. So that always like was a little bit of a boost. I'm like, oh, okay. He's a local guy, you know, he's right. From my area, but like, no, and going back and watching all the stuff and especially, you know, checking out some of the territorial stuff too, it's like, this dude was great. He was just he was just on another level in terms of promos and his work so ahead of the game as well in terms of what he was able to do even early on in his career. You know, the Steamboat match, of course, at WrestleMania 3 puts him up, and then really, like, you watch any of his, like, his TV matches are just like way more enjoyable than most other people's. You know, his pay-per-view matches for me always way more enjoyable. Got the best match of Ultimate Warrior's career far and away at WrestleMania 7. I think that really is another feather in his cap as well. So yeah, Randy Savage is a guy that I still highly regard. I don't know if I'd still have him in my top five anymore. You know, obviously being able to kind of watch a lot more wrestling, watching wrestling from different regions or whatnot. I think he's been passed up by a few other guys, but I would say easily, like, in terms of my favorite wrestlers, top 10. And I would say he's a top 10 guy overall. I mean, the total package is absolutely there. For him, the longevity is there, the promos are there, the in-ring is there, the character is there. Like, he just got it. He just understood pro wrestling at its very core, and yeah, he's one of our more enjoyable guys. And I've really never been, other than these like 1999 matches, I'm never disappointed if I just throw on a random Randy Savage match or Randy Savage comes up on my screen for a pay-per-view or whatever. It's like, you pretty much know from 1983 till, you know what, 1997 he's going to produce pretty well. And yeah, I would say another real great aspect about him too, unlike, you know, Hulk Hogan and unlike a lot of those other guys, never a guy that shied away from helping, you know, the next generation get over. We talk about the first time we talked, you know, for WrestleSpective, the DDP match. I mean, that made DDP, and Savage knew that that's what he was doing in those matches, is I'm going to make DDP. The Ricky Steamboat thing, was more than happy to lose to Ricky Steamboat and let Ricky Steamboat kind of start his run. Obviously that got derailed or whatnot. And yeah, there's time and time again where you watch him in WCW and stuff. And he's a guy that he'll always do business in that way. And that I'll always respect way more than guys like Nash or Hogan or those sort of guys. Savage never wanted to protect his spot. He didn't really give a shit. You know, he wanted to go out there, have a good match, have, you know, get people excited, give them, you know, a big moment or whatnot, but it didn't really matter to him if he was not in every single main event or whatever, if he wasn't the champion all the time. So obviously, like you said, every time he was champion, he loses to Hogan the next day, because I'm sure they're like, hey, we're gonna have Hogan beat you, and he's like, whatever, dude. Okay, fine, right. Whatever.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, whatever.
Yeah,
like, I'm not gonna get in this argument, I'm not gonna play these politics, whatever, not a problem. So I highly regard him. I absolutely highly regard him, and yeah, I would really recommend for people that have not, a lot of it's on YouTube as well, check out pre-WWF Randy Savage too. I think you'll be surprised how good he was almost early on, and it helps that obviously you have a dad who's a legend in the business as well. But Savage is like great from the beginning and stayed good until pretty much this 1999 year when things kind of fell off the rails a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even 99, there's still, you know, this despite describing him, you know, very negatively, there's still bits in here where some of the brilliance seeps out, not really in the wrestling, but still kind of in the character moments or in the personality. I mean, there's still some of that peeking out, but it is very rare. I'm going to give some of it more of a watch just so I can see if, you know, the reality matches my memory. I have a feeling it, you know, pretty much does, but I recommend, you know, pretty much looking at every era of Savage's career, particularly pre-WWF, which I'm planning to try to explore a bit myself. But you're pretty very rarely going to go wrong here. So and if you have to watch a 99 match, I think this is a pretty good reflection of the character, and this is pretty much the peak of what it is for that time. So
yeah, absolutely.
So Rich, thank you for joining us. A lot of fun. Glad to talk wrestling with you. I'm sure we'll do so again in the future. Of course, we do talk basketball a lot at Over and Back. Anything you want to mention going on at Voices Wrestling?
Yeah, just say voiceswrestling.com is the main website there. We have reviews, columns, previews of everything. Well, everything, quote unquote, going on in the world of wrestling, you know, right now. I guess there's still some stuff going on. I would say the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network as well. You guys are probably looking for some audio to get you through the days, and there's plenty of great stuff there. Not only just the Voice Wrestling flagship, like you mentioned, but we have stuff covering any part of wrestling. We have, you know, Japanese-centric podcasts. We have, you know, retro podcasts. We have just WWE podcasts, that sort of stuff. All that is for free. The Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. We even have a wrestling quiz show, stuff that would, I think, really appeal to a lot of the listeners here. So Voice Wrestling Podcast Network for that. And if you need even more of me or wrestling coverage, we do have a Patreon as well. It's patreon.com/voiceswrestling or voiceswrestling.com/patreon, whichever works for you. And we have a lot of content on there too, a lot of retro stuff as well. Right now I'm kind of going through the spring breakouts in WCW, so that's a good one too. I do like kind of every year or every kind of, you know, depending on what day it is, like if, you know, spring, I'll do, you know, I did the spring breakout, in the summer I did SummerSlam, and, you know, Halloween, I'll go back and look at old Halloween Havoc. So that stuff's going all on Patreon as well, which is pretty cool to jump into those. So yeah, we have tiers available for every price range as well. So that's, I'll say, yeah, overall, voiceswrestling.com, patreon.com/voiceswrestling, and anything going on in the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network.
All right, great. Yeah, definitely check that out. Always good stuff. And thanks again for being on the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back again soon.